The City Council President Beverly. Also, we'll be talking with Kristen Goodhue of Care Dimensions.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. We'll get right to it in just a second. So hang in there with us. Trending Now with Josh Arnold.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Rogers Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else. It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get from our boats to your plate.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is Cheryl Meehan, the District Governor of Rotary District 7930. Cheryl, welcome to the program.
Josh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, we usually start out, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, personal, professional, and then we'll get into some other questions from there.
Sure. Let me see. Currently, I am the Director of Volunteer Services and Complementary Therapies at Care Dimensions, and I'm very proud of my work at Care Dimensions. We're the largest hospice in Massachusetts. We're nonprofit, and we're firmly committed to our mission of giving the highest quality of service to our patients and their loved ones. Before that, I had my own company for approximately 21 years in the electronic field, and have two beautiful daughters and five beautiful grandchildren.
Wow, that's great. That's great. Now, you've been involved, I know, in community service up to and including Rotary. Can you share some of that with us?
Of course. I've been on many boards of nonprofits. I'm firmly committed in giving back to my community. I started as a 12-year-old working as a candy striper at Choate Hospital in Woburn, and never stopped volunteering because I firmly believe you always get so much more than you could ever give.
That's great. And you became involved in Rotary when?
89, I think it was.
Wow.
In the Wilmington Rotary Club, and truthfully, I joined it because it was a lot of fun. They were a really active group of Rotarians who did a lot in the community, but also they really knew how to enjoy themselves and focus on doing good is serious fun.
Great. Great. And this year, currently, you are the district governor, and I know a lot goes into that position in terms of the year before or the 2 years before, building up to it, and then
Absolutely.
This year. Tell us about what that was like for you getting into this year and what it's been like since you started July 1.
Well, coming into the district governor track was really exciting. I went to a lot of different district governor trainings and really learned so very much, not only about Rotary, but about all of the different avenues that we work with and the international scope. And while it's so very important to have that in the background, that we are international, that the most important thing, and I think this year's training was really excellent because it reminded us that it's our members who are the most important people in Rotary at all times, because they are the ones that are actually doing the work to make a difference in this world. And my year started off with a bang. We had a wonderful installation dinner at the Danvers Point Yacht Club where we and our presidents of each club passed the gavel to our incoming presidents and assistant governors and the district governor track, and it was just a wonderful, exciting night for everybody. But again, the focus was on how can we make a difference in this world? How can we make sure that our footsteps aren't washed away by the ocean, that we know that we will make this world a little bit better just by being here?
That's great. And what are some of the things that you've had to do this year as the governor? What has that experience been like for you?
It's been wonderful. As you know, I travel to all 47 clubs, and also we have an e-club, which is wonderful. And it's great to meet all of our members and find out what each and every club is doing in their community and internationally. I have been blown away by what our members have done to make their communities so much better, whether it's working with community meals, whether it is working with the homeless, the hungry. It's just some of the projects they have done within their own communities. Just, they're amazing. And then also the work that they do internationally with water projects, health projects, education projects, the list goes on and on and on. And I am just so very proud to be a part of this organization and to know these wonderful people and to call many of them, if not most of them, my friends. It's been an amazing experience that I've truly been blessed to have.
That's true. I made a lot of friends being part of Rotary, not just in Gloucester, but then when I get involved at the district and then at the zone level. So there's a lot of things happen, but you make friends, and those people you stay with, you stay, whether you're involved in the district or the zone or not, you stay in touch with them.
Become lifelong friends,
yeah,
because you have that same commitment of wanting to make the world a little better, and you continuously work toward that. I have to say that I have never, ever met a Rotarian I did not like, because all Rotarians are committed, and they're friendly people. They just want to make a difference, and that focus continues on, whether it's within Rotary, very often you're going to find Rotarians also supporting other nonprofits, organizations, making differences in other areas, whether it's in the schools, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, most of
volunteers who are committed to service.
Most of the folks that are in Rotary in Gloucester, they're members of that club, but they're also, just as you say, they're in the Little League, they're in the YMCA, they're the Chamber of Commerce, they're the Art Association. It's they're one of many hats that they wear. Tell me, you'll be here in Gloucester tomorrow for
I
the
will.
7th annual Polar Plunge. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's really, really exciting, and as you know, it's always held at the Cape Ann Motor Inn on Long Beach. We really expect quite a few of these crazy people to be running into that water. It's amazing how courageous our Rotarians are, that they're willing to make a difference for polio. It starts probably around 10:30, 10:45, and I know they're planning on going into the water about 11:15, and of course that has to depend on the tide. It's exciting. We have so many Rotarians. We have friends, family, and we have a lot of Interact students, a lot of youth from the high schools, and it's an amazing experience to know that everybody there is committed to eradicating polio. And Josh, as you know, I am a polio survivor, so this is very close, very dear to my heart that we eradicate so no child will have to deal with this ravaging disease in the future. We're very, very lucky. Right now, it's restricted to 5 countries, as you know.
Yeah.
Afghanistan, Pakistan, Nigeria, Guinea, and Laos, People's Democratic Republic. The numbers have been so dramatically constrained because we committed a long time ago as Rotarians that we were going to eradicate this disease, and I know that right at this point we are 99% there. All we need is just a little bit more, and we're committed to eradicating and we are committed to finding those dollars. And as you know, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation matches every dollar that Rotarians raise 2 to 1. And that truly is helping us make a difference.
You know, we 7 years ago, the year I was the president of the Gloucester Club, Steve Cady, who was a past president and Paul Harris person and a head of our foundation, was at a Rotary District thing, and they had, you know, someone had suggested, why don't we do a polar plunge? So he came up to me and he said, they came up with something. I said, what happened in your seminar? Oh, they came up with something and it's perfectly suited for you. I said, really?
He was right.
And I said, really? Well, I said, what? And I just could see it in his eye. I'm going to get conned into something. What do I have to do? He said, well, you have to jump in the ocean in February. I said, well, I'm not going to jump in the ocean for $50. I said, but what are we talking about here? I said, you get the club or people in Gloucester to kick in like $500,000, I'll do it. I don't have to stay in there too long, do I? And that's where this all started. So I
know.
At the time I went back, I went back to the board and I said, why don't we offer to host it? To ask Brad Pierce if we could launch from down there and we could serve coffee and chowder or hot chocolate or donuts or whatever. And we did. And it was one of the people that was one of the district leaders at the time said, if we do this right, you know, it could be a fellowship thing, it could be an education thing, and it could be a fundraiser. And the idea being that a lot of people in the United States don't relate to polio because they don't see it every day. You do because you had it, you were afflicted with it growing up. But people who are a few generations, and I'm not aging you here, but people who were born, you know, a little bit later didn't see it or didn't experience it, and it's kind of out of sight, out of mind kind of thing. So
absolutely.
A big piece of what Rotary does is to try to educate the public that this is still a real concern in some of the real far corners of the world. And I never could have imagined this when we had that conversation at the district event or even the first year when 35 of us fools ventured the icy water. But the reality was, and you know what? I didn't think it was that bad. I mean, I went in that first year. It was like the water temperature was 38 degrees, the air temperature was about the same. And, you know, this isn't that bad. But anyway, the next year it was bad. and after the third year, they vetoed it at home, me going in anymore until I was in better shape. So,
I have to say, the Gloucester Rotary, they had this down pat. They come in, they set up, they do everything. It's just amazing. And they do it with a smile. The work that goes into this, because again, Gloucester does host this every single year. And it has developed. Last year we were able to donate for almost $100,000 to End Polio Now because of the work that you and Gloucester Rotarians started 7 years ago. And that's amazing that every year it's getting better and better and better. And I know that the Rotarians in Gloucester, you're a well-oiled machine. You know exactly what has to be done, when it has to be done, and it just gets done. It's amazing. And
If you want to see a well-oiled machine, show up to the pancake breakfast. Now that's an event. But anyway, I never could have envisioned that it would have grown the way it has grown. And every year, there's more people plunging. There's more people showing up. And the first 3 years, I don't think we got the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation money. But since then, and every year that's happened, they've raised upwards of $100,000. So with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation money, we've raised over $1 million.
Absolutely. And so, from
one idea
that a Gloucester Rotarian came up with.
Hey, amazing. One kind of a last question for you. You and I are both of the generation where President Kennedy, you know, put up a call to public service through his inaugural speech called people to give back to the community, to give more of themselves to others. To what extent are you concerned that may be fading with successive generations, and What impact does that have, or could that have, on Rotary and other community service organizations, and what can be done about that?
I really don't have any concern about the generations coming behind us. They truly want to give back. They want to do service. They just don't want to have a lot of the pomp and circumstances. I went to the UN this year, and I had Interact students that I was chaperoning, and we had so many conversations, and they're already committed to making a difference in their world. They want to do it their way. And I was at the Rotaract clubs, and it was the same concept, and I've talked to people in their teens and their 20s that they want to do it. They don't want to have to go for a meal. What they want to do is get their hands involved, get their feet going, and just do the work. And I think that will continue on. I do think that we have to be flexible, and we have to listen to the younger generation so that we can work with them to make sure that they're doing the type of projects that they want to do, and we're behind them 100%. I know that, you know, you have that time frame, a teenager to the early 20s, and they're very active. And then there's a few years that, let's face it, we all went through that we were bringing up our families. So there's a little bit of a backdrop from there, but then it comes right back in. So no, I have no concerns. I know that Rotarians will continue to attract the type of people who want to give back, and we just have to work with them to make sure that we're helping them do what they want to do.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Allen. Geez, I almost said the Rotary Radio Hour. Anyway, Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and I look forward to seeing you tomorrow at the Polar Plunge.
Absolutely, Josh. I'm looking forward to it, and you take care. Get a lot of rest tonight, because I know you're going to be working hard tomorrow.
Great. Thank you, Cheryl. Right.
Thanks, Josh.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We'll treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright Double Hung Insert Window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Looking for a reliable place to produce your team's uniforms or your business's corporate apparel? Then Sauk Asian Sportswear is the place for you. Conveniently located on Route 1 South in Peabody, Mass., Sauk Asian Sportswear handles all aspects of your needs, from price quoting to providing visual proofs to production completion. Visit our website, SaukAsianSports.com, to view our monthly specials, vendor catalogs, and to request a quote. Remember, Sauk Asian Sportswear is the place to go.
Thank you.
as sometimes happens in live radio, we don't make connections with our guests, and so we'll keep trying. But in the meantime, Josh, a little more about what's going on tomorrow. I heard you talking about how this thing got started and so on, and what how many people are expected? How many clubs are expected? How many usually show up? And what are the logistics like when people want to go over there? And if the general public wants to go over, maybe take a look or donate.
It's grown every year. There have been as many as 1,000 people there, not all plunging. They expect around 200 plus to be plunging tomorrow, actually going into the water. And you usually have two or three...
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Maybe that's our guest.
Hello.
Hi, Josh Arnold. It's Paul Guanci.
Hey, Paul. How
are
you?
There you go.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's fine.
You passed and I started doing something else.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
Welcome back to we're actually live with Trending Now with Josh Arnold. And our next guest is Paul Guanci, who is the president of the City Council in Beverly, Mass. Paul, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me today.
Paul, we usually start out, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and we can talk about, you know, how you get into politics and your ascension to position of council president and what's happening in Beverly and so forth.
Yeah, I actually got involved in politics, I hate to say right around the turn of the century, but I was, I've always been involved in my family business on Cabot Street. And we're at Super Sub Shop in Beverly, 324 Cabot Street. I've been here since, I always like to say, I graduated college on a Saturday. My mother had a party on a Sunday, and Monday I came to work for my father. And back in the late 90s, I was looking to do something else. There was a seat open on the city council, and I ran for office, and I was lucky enough to get elected. I did 8 terms, and then I retired, and then 2 years after that, I came back, so I've been back 8 years now.
Wow. And so what is that like for you when you first got on? And the question I ask people is, how has the institution or the changed since you first got on to what it's like now?
You know, it's still very similar. You know, it's all about public service. We're still out there taking phone calls and... helping individuals with issues that they have in the city, be it a stop sign, be it a sidewalk or a tree or, you know, anything. You try to be here to answer any questions and at least point people in the right direction. And in terms of the big picture of thing, you're always trying to work hard to make the city a better place. So every year since I've been around, every year there's been a new project. Right back in 2000, we started on the elementary schools. Enlarging and rebuilding them, and now we're in the process of finishing up the last school in Beverly, our new middle school. Every year you deal with similar issues.
I know way back when I went to college, I was doing a paper on city government, and Gloucester had changed, I think when I was in high school, it changed from a city manager type government to a strong mayor type government. And I know Beverly was used as a model when they were developing our local charter. And I remember interviewing a guy named Dean Cushing, who was a former city manager in Gloucester. And he said to me, and it's always stuck with me, he said, you know, I could be out there trying to bring in a big company to help boost the economy of Gloucester or trying to come up with a plan to finance something else. He said, but just as important as all that is the constituent service. It's responding to the constituent that the garbage guy or the trash guy didn't pick up their trash that day, or there's a pothole in the road, or the street didn't get plowed, or they didn't make a wide enough swath, and he said, you know, and that's the balance that you get in public service, and it doesn't matter if I'm the city manager, the mayor, or a city councilor, that's the kind of stuff that that you deal with.
I would agree with you wholeheartedly, and you mentioned. A little while and a couple sentences ago that you talked about bringing that big business into the city to help with the tax base or something like that, and that's really I think that that's, while the city council can help in that, I think that's really falls down to the mayor and what direction that he wants the city to go into. I mean, back in the day, we had United Shoe Machinery Company that was down on Elliott Street, and they closed. And a former mayor back in the mid-90s, William Scanlon, went out and lobbied to get Cummings Properties into the old United Shoe facility. And if you've, you know, been to Beverly in the last 20 years, you can see what they've done to that property.
What a beautiful place. But not a beautiful place, but just well-organized, lots of business and trade in there, and certainly a model for other communities as well.
Yeah, it is. You need that, especially here in Beverly. We don't have the mall like the Ambers and Peabody does. We don't have the big tech industry that Burlington does to help with their tax base. So when we can get a company of that size that's that dedicated to the community, you really have to get them in here, and you have to work with them so they stay.
And part of the – and you, as a member of the city council, you deal with the thing every year called tax classification, in which they, each community has to allocate what percentage of the tax base it is for residential versus open space versus business and industry. And, you know, that's just by law that you have to do that. But how does that go in Beverly? And is it straight across the board, or is it more tilted to a residential or business? And what are some of the issues that confront that?
Historically, it's always been shifted a little more toward the business sector, the commercial and industrial sector of our tax base. And the reason being, and this policy has been through the, you know, I've been on for three mayors, and the policy has always been try to make the shift every year so that you have that 2.5% increase that we go up every year. You want to make sure that the residential bills and the commercial bills are rising about the same percentage-wise.
Okay.
So when we are able to do that shift, and it's not a huge shift. It's not a maximum shift. It's about a halfway that we're able to do that so that, the tax bills rise equally.
Yeah. I know that some communities have, I remember Wilbraham, I think, what was it? Is Wilbraham the place that was the host, the flagship for Friendly's?
That sounds like it might be right out in Western Mass.
And I think they gave, and the only industry they had there was Friendly's, the corporate headquarters. So I think they got the best deal they could because they were interested in keeping them there. So I know that there's some communities that are trying to maintain some form of commercial or industrial base or attract one will set the rates in such a way so to achieve those ends. And in other communities, they're set up differently and other things come into play. What are some of the other – I know – I think when we covered folks during the election, there was some work being done on Hurd Stadium. What happened to that? Is that – all done, or?
Yeah, Hurd Stadium has already been completed.
Yeah, and
redid the clubhouse. It's Hurd Stadium. There's always been talk about building a new stadium on the high school campus, but I would say that Hurd Stadium, especially for the old timers here in Beverly, is like our own Fenway Park. What will we do without it?
Yeah, yeah.
It was the opinion of the previous administration and the current administration that we need that facility and we'll continue to use it for football, for the high school and football on the lower levels also, play some lacrosse and some soccer on there also, but limited.
Yeah.
So Hurd Stadium doesn't get the play that, say, the new turf field at Beverly High School does. So, that was pretty simple. We did away with some stands there that were falling apart and replaced them. But in the grand scheme of things, that's really a small project because we do have a lot going on in Beverly, especially with the Route 1A project.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I know that there's been a lot of road work done, and I know that the area by Victoria Rocky Post and all that has just been under constant change, and I'm still, when I go to Beverly for whatever, I have to remember how to navigate those rotaries because they come up on you and so forth. But how has that project gone, and what do you anticipate going in there because of all of those changes?
Well, I mean, it all was, those changes were made because every intersection in that neighborhood was deemed unsafe by the Mass Department of Transportation.
Okay.
Rather than lights, Mayor Scanlon worked with the state to design that system with the roundabouts as opposed to rotaries. Roundabouts are smaller.
Okay.
And the ultimate goal was to be able to make that exit 19, more accessible to commercial land that's in the process of being developed right next to where those, right across the street from the post.
And that land that's going to be developed, did I understand that that was owned by the Archdiocese?
Yeah, years ago it was owned by the Archdiocese. They sold it when the Archdiocese of Boston ran into some financial trouble back in the early 2000s.
Yeah, I remember that.
They sold it to one developer. It turned out it was sold to another developer. And now it's owned by a company that is the CEA Group. They're putting a Whole Foods in there. They're putting a shopping plaza in there, a Whole Foods with four or five other businesses there.
Great, great. Okay, we got about two, three minutes left. Now, this is an election year for Beverly?
It is. You know, the municipal election, you know, as well as I do, it's every 2 years.
Yeah.
Nomination papers are available in April.
Okay. Is the mayor a two- or four-year term then?
On the school committee.
The mayor is a two- or a four-year term for Beverly?
Mayor is two here in Beverly. We've looked at it as a four-year term. It would require a charter change.
Yeah. And that's fairly involved, isn't it?
There doesn't seem to be the appetite for it just yet.
Okay. And what do you see? It's too early to make predictions about what most of the folks pretty happy with who's in office, or you think most of the people that are there are going to want to re-up and do it again, or are people thinking, well, this was good, but I think let me time to find something else to do, or what do you think?
Well, you're always worried that when you've been doing it a long time, you're worried about someone coming in or people saying, wow, he's been there too long, I can't vote for him. But I think 2 years ago, there was, we have nine city councilors. Only one city council had an opponent. The mayor had a half-hearted opponent at best.
Yeah.
I think that things are going pretty well here in the city of Beverly. There's a few things that we could probably work on. The thing about elective office is the time that it takes.
Yeah, it does.
I think that everybody is real busy. I mean, I would like to see, I'm an at-large city councilor, and the at-large city councilor who finishes first gets to be president. It wouldn't be a bad thing to have people to run, just so you're out there discussing and talking about the issues that are facing our city.
Now, that's interesting. I just want to pick that point up. The person who finishes first gets to be... Now, that's not in the charter. Is that a tradition?
That is in the charter.
Oh, it is in the charter. Okay.
Yeah, it was in the new charter that was passed by the citizens of Beverly in 1996.
Okay, all right. Because in Gloucester, back when they had a Plan E form of government, the mayor was a ceremonial type mayor. Might have got an extra, $100 or $200 for being the mayor, but the tradition was not written down anywhere. But the tradition was whoever got the most votes at large got to be mayor.
Yeah,
and
so that's like the city. I mean, the city of Worcester. The president of the city council is actually. Has that title of mayor.
Okay, all right.
And they're a city manager, same thing.
Okay, well, that's good. I'm interested to know that. So you think there'll be people, active campaigns and everything this year? And
I mean, I hope so. Like I said, it's good to get the issues out there. Okay. I would think that the majority of the people that are on the city council now will run again.
Okay.
I would like to be there. I've been there since we started the whole school rebuilding process, and we're on the last one that's going to open next September of 2018. I would like to be around for that.
Yeah.
I think that if you're going to run against this mayor, who's doing a good job and has surrounded himself with good people, you would have to really get out there and start thinking about running right now.
Okay. Yeah, there's usually a big lead time for a position like that, and
yeah.
You have to raise a lot of money. It's not inexpensive to run for campaigns. I know that Gloucester hits $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 for a candidacy for mayor, has at times, and I'm sure Beverly probably is that or more. So want to thank you for being a guest, taking time out of your busy schedule and being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and we'll have to have you back when you announce your plans for re-election, and we'll, I'm sure we will be putting something together for the election cycle to have as many of the candidates on and talk about the issues.
Great. Happy to do that, and if you get down to Beverly, stop in and say hi.
I will, Paul. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Josh. Have
Bye-bye.
A great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right.
Gloria Food Store is still Beverly's number one deli, and no matter what New England weather is thrown at us, Gloria is open. With fresh bread delivered from Sunray Bakery every morning, Gloria can provide party platters, calzones, hot trays, cold trays, salad trays, and finger sandwiches for whatever you have planned. Call in your order at 978-922-3613, stop in at 268 Rantoul Street, or visit GloriaFoodStore.com. Many aspects of estate planning are interrelated, and you can turn to attorney Bob Madruga for full-service estate planning to help you develop a comprehensive plan in providing for your future. Bob will work with you through the years to adapt your plan as needed, and he can assist you with managing wills, trusts, probate, and taxes. Visit the law offices of Robert J. Madruga at 128 Main Street, Gloucester, or call today for an appointment at 978-283-6883.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Kristen Goodhue at Care Dimensions. Kristen, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Usually start out with, tell us about yourself, your background, your education, family, and so forth, and then how you came to work at Care Dimensions.
Sure. So I am the Children's Program Manager at Care Dimensions. I'm also a certified child life specialist. I have my bachelor's degree from the University of Connecticut, and my master's degree in child life from Wheelock College. I've worked in a variety of different healthcare environments. I worked at Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C., in the radiology department. And then I moved on to become the medical outreach manager at Make-A-Wish, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island. Currently, I also work as a per diem child life specialist at Shriners Hospital in Boston. And I've been at Care Dimensions for about 2 years now.
Great. Our earlier guest was Cheryl Meehan, who also works with you there, but we were talking with her about her work as the district governor for Rotary. Tell us a little bit about we got an alarm here on a phone, but we'll be able to get to that. Tell me about Care Dimensions and what it does, number of patients, what some of its workings are, if you will.
Yeah, sure. So Care Dimensions is the largest provider of hospice services for children and adults in Massachusetts, and we serve close to about 800 patients a day and care for them wherever they call home. So that might be, you know, their home, a hospital, a skilled nursing facility, assisted living, wherever the patient is, we will go there. And then we have the Kaplan Family Hospice House, which cares for over 1,000 patients annually. And we're also currently building a second house, which is going to be on the Waltham-Lincoln line, and that will be expected to be open later this year.
Okay.
And we provide at the Bertillon Center for Grief and Healing, which is where I work, we provide grief and bereavement support to both families who have had a loved one on hospice service with us, as well as families in our community.
And in working with the children's services, is that about dealing with children who are in hospice, or the impact that hospice has on surviving children?
No, it's actually both. So we work with families of our adult hospice patients here. So we work with children, grandchildren, nieces and nephews, whoever the children are who are involved in the family. And then we also work with our pediatric hospice patients and their siblings, as well as any child in the community who is anticipating a loss or has experienced a loss of their own.
Must be very difficult to, I can't imagine that it's easy to work for an organization that tries to comfort people who are nearing the end of their life, but particularly in the case of a child, that must be particularly difficult. Tell us a little bit about that, if you can.
Yeah, you know, children are so resilient, and, you know, a lot of times, while it is definitely difficult, it's also very rewarding, and, you know, we really empower the parents to do as much as they're able to do, and a lot of times it's just kind of responding to their child's needs and meeting them where they are. And we also use a lot of play to help children express themselves, so a lot of what we do is through the work of play.
Okay. And what are some of the other services that Care Dimension provides?
So our children's program, specifically, we offer children's bereavement support groups. Mm-hmm. So these are run year-round, both in our North Shore and Greater Boston locations. We also do teen events. We have an upcoming teen event on February 20th at La Vida Rock Gym in Wenham. So this is a rock climbing event open to teens who are grieving the death of someone. We also do different teen events. Like, we have another writing workshop coming up in March specific for teens. And then we have our annual Camp Stepping Stones, which is a one-day summer camp experience open to any child and their family who are who have experienced a loss. A lot of what we do as well is offer phone consultations or in-person consultations to parents or caregivers when they have a child who has experienced a loss. And then we also do one-on-one grief counseling, either in a child's home, at their school, in our office here in Danvers or Waltham.
Great. And I guess, a question is, how do you get the word out about what the scope of your services are, and so that more people could benefit from them? Do you network with other organizations?
So we do a lot of work with schools in the community or other community programs. So if a school has experienced a loss, we'll offer to provide support to the school. Oftentimes we do run support groups within the school setting. And then, anyone can contact us. So a family member can contact us. Anyone who knows of a child who might benefit from our services can contact us. What we require is just that we do hear from the parent or guardian. And then we can kind of see what makes the most sense. But our services, like I said, are available to anyone in our community. So we just encourage them to reach out to us directly and see what the needs are.
And walk me through a little bit more about the Camp Stepping Stones and what does that involve? Is it just one day, or is it a one-day thing that happens more than once?
So it's a one-day camp program. So it's going to take place on Saturday, July 8th this year.
Okay.
And that's at the Glen Urquhart School in Beverly. And that camp is open to children and their families who have experienced a loss. So the programming for kids is available for ages 4 to 18, but we also do offer child care for kids younger than four. And the camp, what happens at camp is the kids are then split up into small groups based on their age, and they rotate through a variety of expressive art activities. So we offer yoga, we have music therapy, pet therapy, different memory-making activities. And while the kids are participating in those activities, the adults actually get to participate in different workshops of their own. So we have different presenters that talk about, raising grieving children. And then we do offer different adult workshops such as Reiki, massage, again, memory making workshops, writing workshops, so that the adults really feel like they can connect with others while their child is doing the same. And then at the end of camp, we usually reconnect the families. They'll do a little activity together, and then do a closing ceremony.
Is there a component that helps parents help children through a grieving process?
Yes. So one of our presenters who has come to camp for the last several years, he does a great talk on raising grieving children, and he talks about, you know, typical grief reactions based on developmental level, as well as, you know, how a parent can support their grieving child.
Okay. Yeah, it's I'm you're talking to a person who has had been in that situation, and it's as a sibling, I lost two sisters who died of terminal illnesses, and as a parent, I lost two children. So it's I'm wondering how many you know, what sort of resources are out there that would help help folks, and I'm glad that you folks are doing that. We've got about 3 minutes left. What else can you share with us about all the good work that you and other folks are doing at Care Dimensions?
Well, I think, you know, our big focus recently has been really to expand our teen program. So teens, you know, who are experiencing a loss can often feel very isolated. You know, their school community doesn't really talk about it openly. They might not talk about it openly with their parents or their friends. So while we know the need is there, it's hard to get them connected. So what we're trying to do is offering these one-time teen events that really focus on connecting teens. So they might be, like I said, that we have a rock climbing event coming up, we have a music workshop coming up, we've done an event at a go-kart race. So teens really are encouraged to come and just, you know, be there, have fun, meet other teens who have also experienced something so that they don't feel so alone.
Sure.
So that's one of our big focuses lately is really growing our teen program to meet those needs.
Are the YMCAs and other youth programs groups that you are targeting or have developed relationships to collaborate with in that regard?
Yeah, so we send out flyers to all the different community organizations that serve children and teens, both in the North Shore and Greater Boston. Most often, a lot of our collaboration is with, like I said, schools or group homes or hospitals. But if there's a need, you know, we encourage people to reach out to us, and we'll go wherever there is a need.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Certainly offer our appreciation for all the good work that you folks do at Care Dimensions. It's a particularly difficult task that you have, and we were the beneficiaries. Our personal family have had hospice assistance in the past, and can't say enough about how great they are. So thank you for being a guest, and wish you the very best going forward.
Thank you very much for having me.
Take care, Kristen. Bye now.
Bye.
Well, we made it through the hour.
We did. We actually caught up.
Through no help of mine, but... appreciate it, and some very interesting conversation, as always, here on Trending Now. Heard most Fridays. We won't be here. Yeah, we will, next Friday. We're on next Friday.
We're here next Friday.
Yes, we are, and have you got stuff lined up?
I have Lynn Burke, who is the co-founder of Lumen Arts, will be here.
What's that?
It's a displaying lights marketing thing for events and stuff, and she's going to tell us a little bit about Patricia Gentile. Dr. Gentile is the president of North Shore Community College, who will be our guest. Carol Perelzola of Element Care, part of PACE, will be a guest. And Jack Clark, who's the director of policy and development for Mass Audubon Society, will round out the interviews next Friday.
So we can talk about coyotes and piping plovers or piping plovers?
I was so tempted when I saw the posting about the coyote meeting on in City Hall on Facebook to write, I bet you get more people for the coyotes than you do for the budget.
When I was at WESX, well, that's what Greg Vergas says. Greg says, you know, you talk about dogs. In thousands of people there, you talk about budget. You could, you know, cricket. When I was at WESX, Al Needham used to have a talk show. And the biggest audience that he would have, the most participation he would have, was when he talked about the town of Marblehead instituting a pooper scooper law for dogs.
Yeah, so, well, there you go.
Well, I get it.
Yeah. Well, you know what counts. What hits all politics is local.
There you go. Right. So is it piping plover or piping plover?
Who?
The pronunciation.
Of?
Piping plover or piping plover?
I don't know.
Well, we'll find out for Mass Audubon,
yeah,
won't we?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for your patience, Josh. I appreciate it. The screw-ups today are all mine. And thank you to our audience. Don't forget, most Fridays here at 10 a.m. Trending Now with Josh Arnold. And, of course, a daily newscast called North Shore Today on MSO News Sports and all the myriad of sporting events, sporting coverage that Bill Newell has on a daily basis. Live broadcast as well. Check out the website from time to time daily, will you? I'm Rick Moore. On behalf of Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, have a great day.